Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the OR Royalties Q2 2025 Results Conference Call. After the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. Please note that this call is being recorded today, August 6, 2025, at 10:00 A.M. Eastern Time. I would now like to turn the meeting over to our host for today's call, Mr. Jason Attew. Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs, bienvenue à l'appel conférence des résultats du deuxième trimestre 2025 de Redevance OR. Après la présentation, nous procéderons à une séance de questions et réponses. Si vous désirez poser une question, veuillez appuyer sur la touche étoile suivie du numéro un. Veuillez prendre note que cet appel est enregistré aujourd'hui, le 6 août 2025, à 10:00 heure de l'Est. J'aimerais maintenant céder la parole à votre hôte, Monsieur Jason Attew.
Merci, Joelle. Good day to everybody, and thanks for your attention this morning, as I know it's a busy reporting week. Procedurally, I'll run through the presentation, and then we'll open up the line for questions. For those participating online via the webcast, you can submit your questions in advance through the webcast platform. Today's presentation will also be available and downloadable online through our corporate website. Please note that there are forward-looking statements in this presentation from which actual results may differ. All amounts presented and discussed on today's call are in U.S. dollars, unless otherwise noted. I'm joined on the call today by Frédéric Ruel, the company's VP Finance and Chief Financial Officer, as well as my other colleagues, as indicated on slide three. Taking a look back at OR Royalties' second quarter of 2025, we were pleased with our GEOs earned, our cash margin, cash flows, as well as our overall debt reduction. OR Royalties earned 19,700 GEOs in the second quarter, a modest step up over the first quarter of the year, which puts the company on track to achieve its previously published full-year 2025 GEO delivery guidance of 80,000-88,000 gold equivalent ounces. Recall that we had been very explicit about the fact that due to sequencing at some of our major producing assets, including Malartic and Mantos Blancos, the first half of the year was always going to amount to approximately 45% of the midpoint of our 2025 GEO guidance range. Basically, we're there, or modestly above it, as of June 30th. Needless to say, we're expecting a stronger second half to the year. Of note is that the first half of 2025, there's approximately 1,200 GEOs that were not realized compared to our internal budget due to the higher gold-silver ratio in the first half of this year versus the ratio we use for our annual guidance of 83:1. That said, higher gold prices have translated to record cash flows from operating activities for OR Royalties for both the second quarter and the first six months of the year. As you can imagine, our shareholders should be satisfied with these price movements. Our cash margin remained robust in the second quarter, but saw a slight dip from the first quarter due to some final residual GEO contribution from the shuttered Renard Diamond Mine. OR Royalties ended the second quarter with $49.6 million in cash, and as at June 30th, we were in a net cash position for the first time in several years, as the company continued to pay down its revolving credit facility during the period. While members of our corporate development team remain extremely busy, the only transaction completed of note during the period was our acquisition of a 100% silver stream on Orla Mining's South Railroad project in Nevada for a total consideration of $13 million. While seemingly small for now, with an updated feasibility study expected on the project from Orla in the second half of 2025, and positive momentum seen in the permitting of new projects in the U.S. in particular, we are excited about the path forward for South Railroad over the next few years. With respect to our ongoing commitment to return capital to shareholders, the company declared and paid its quarterly dividend of $0.055 per share in the second quarter, marking its 43rd consecutive dividend. OR Royalties' history of progressive dividend payments serves as a testament to the confidence that we have in the consistency, predictability, and the anticipated growth of the current and future cash flows underpinning our business. Now moving on to the company's financial performance for Q2. Quarterly revenues of $60.4 million tracked higher versus the same period last year, largely thanks to increased commodity prices. Net earnings of 17 cents per basic common share for the period was also markedly a significant year-over-year improvement, where a loss was previously recognized due to the technical failure and subsequent suspension of operations at the Eagle Mine in the Yukon, resulting in OR Royalties having written down the asset to zero in the same period last year. Most importantly, Q2 of 2025 saw year-over-year improvement in both cash flow per share at 27 cents versus 21 cents in Q2 of last year, as well as quarterly adjusted earnings of 18 cents per common share versus 13 cents again in the same period of last year. Moving to slide six. During the second quarter of 2025, our GEOs earned came predominantly from Canada, and we derived over 93% of our gold equivalent ounces from precious metals. We are continuing to see a modestly increasing contribution from copper as part of the overall mix, almost entirely associated with our copper stream at the CSA mine. Some comments on specific mine performances during the quarter before speaking about a couple of our more material assets in greater detail. Agnico Eagle's Canadian Malartic had yet another fantastic quarter, including a significant step change quarter over quarter, given Q1 included the work on site associated with in-pit tailings disposal adjustments that were ultimately completed faster than anticipated. A reminder that historically we've often seen stronger back halves of the year from Canadian Malartic versus the other way around, so that bodes well for our final 6 months of 2025. At Capstone Copper's Mantos Blancos operation, Q2 production was effectively flat year over year, despite the much improved plant throughput. And this was largely due to the previously telegraphed lower silver grades experienced at the mine through the first half of our stream delivery year, which started November 1st, 2024 and ends October 31st, 2025. As noted, throughput levels remained at or above the mine's nameplate capacity of 20,000 tons per day at Mantos Blancos, and our anticipation is that silver grades will trend back upwards between now and the end of October. Finally, on Mantos Blancos, and as of last week's Q2 2025 update from Capstone, the Phase 2 feasibility study is now scheduled for 2026. Versus the previous expectation of Q4 of 2025. Finally, we remain impressed with the ongoing successful ramp-up at G Mining Ventures' Tocantinzinho mine in Brazil. Commercial production was only achieved in September of last year, and the ramp-up has gone very well. Finally, for the first time ever represented on this slide, you will see the Namdimi mine in Ghana, for which OR Royalties received its first payment from Cardinal during the period to the tune of 130 GEOs. Moving to slide seven, and as I mentioned earlier, the number of currently producing assets in our portfolio stands at 22. Diving a little bit deeper into that number, and as noted in our press release, during the second quarter, and similar to Namdimi, OR Royalties received its first royalty payment from Talisker Resources, with mining now having started at Bralorn, over which OR Royalties has a 1.7 net smelter royalty. As previously noted, and based on the current trajectory of the asset, OR Royalties expects to start receiving more meaningful royalty payments from both newly contributing assets, but more so from Namdini, through the second half of 2025. A note of congratulations to both operators in getting these mines up and running. Just a quick note on the donut chart in the bottom left-hand corner of the slide. Through H1 2025, OR Royalties saw over 94% of its revenues generated from precious metals. Perhaps more importantly, over 26% of that came directly from silver. With the gold-silver ratio having tightened up considerably since the beginning of June, we're currently back down to about 89-1 from the 2025 highs of approximately 105-1. It is worth noting that OR Royalties can provide lower risk, high quality, and meaningful leverage to silver for investors that are looking for it, especially if silver prices continue to close the gap against gold and trade at ratios we have historically witnessed. Moving on to slide 8, which many of you have seen many times before, our company continues to set itself apart from the rest of its relevant peers in two key areas. First, as it relates to lower risk jurisdictional exposure, and second, as it relates to our peer-leading cash margins. Starting with the former, we continue to believe that OR Royalties is the unequivocal leader when it comes to both NAV and GEOs earned from what we define as Tier 1 mining jurisdictions, which include Canada, the United States, and Australia. And even with the recent deals made by our peers, in addition to the sector consolidation we are witnessing, our position at the far left of this chart isn't expected to be challenged anytime soon. Moving to the latter, OR Royalties' peer-leading cash margins provides our shareholders with both transparent leverage as well as unmatched downside protection. Switching gears to slide 9 and focusing on our cornerstone asset, our partner Agnico Eagle provided some relevant information relating to Canadian Malartic along with its Q2 25 financial results, announced just late last week. As it relates to operations during the period, gold production saw a significant quarter-over-quarter uptick with higher grade source from the Barnett pit, were once again partially offset by slightly lower volume of tons milled. The higher gold grades from Barnett were a result of the continued mining of mineralized zones near the historical underground stopes in the pit that had better than expected grade reconciliation. In addition, and as expected, Agnico's in-pit tailings deposition also ramped up to its designed capacity in the second quarter of 2025. Flipping to slide 10, Odyssey underground gold production during Q2 was a quarterly record at approximately 26,600 ounces, driven by higher grades and ore mined of approximately 3,970 tons per day compared to the target of 3,500 tons per day. The ramp up of the service hoist to its design hoisting capacity of 3,500 tons per day and the increased use of remote operated and automated equipment were the main drivers for exceeding the development and the production targets during the period. On the development front at Odyssey Underground, the second quarter of 2025 saw mine development advance ahead of schedule, with a record of 4,850 meters completed. A key milestone was achieved as the ramp reached the mid-shaft loading station at level 102. The ramp breakthrough to the shaft is scheduled for the third quarter of 2025. The main ramp toward shaft bottom progressed to a depth of 1,019 meters as at June 30th, 2025. Development of the East Gouldie production levels also advanced, with preparatory work underway for the planned production startup in the second half of 2026. Building on continued exploration success at depth and the expansion of the mineral resource at East Gouldie, our partner Agnico is evaluating opportunities to enhance operational efficiency over the medium to long term. One option under consideration is a 70-meter extension of shaft number 1 to a depth of 1,870 meters. This initiative is being assessed in parallel with the potential development of a second shaft at Odyssey. Looking at exploration, Agnico certainly isn't slowing down, with 26 surface and underground drills operating during the period. QT results from drilling into the lower east extension of East Gouldie extended the deposit at depth and to the east and are expected to contribute additional inferred mineral resources in this portion of the deposit by year end of 2025. Further to this, impressive holes intersected in the subparallel eclipse zone, which would be fully covered by OR Royalties 5% NSR royalty, and it has Agnico believing that this area has the potential to add indicated mineral resources and potentially mineral reserves to East Gouldie by year end. Jumping to slide 11, it is important to note that it has only been just over a year since Alamos Gold acquired Argonaut Gold, which was an acquisition that I think over time the market will judge as one of the best return on investments in the gold space, as this expansion study evaluates increasing the Magino mill to 20,000 tons per day. That expansion study is expected to be published by the end of this year. In many ways, internally here at Ore Royalties, we see Island Gold as very much tracking the same progress being made at Canadian Malartic, just with a smaller footprint thanks to more than triple the gold grades. During the second quarter and in late June 2025, Alamos provided an updated life of mine plan for the district, and probably most notably also announced an updated underground mineral reserve of 11.8 million tons, grading 10.85 gram per ton gold for 4.1 million ounces at Island Gold. That's up 80% from year-end 2024 and reflecting the impressive recent conversion of mineral resources. Probably the most exciting part of all, this brand new mine plan serves as just an intermediary stepping stone prior to Alamos's scheduled release of a district expansion study that I mentioned earlier that is expected to be complete in Q4 of 2025, which could potentially see a modest increase to the planned underground mining rates from the currently planned 2,400 tons per day. What could this mean for OR royalties? Well, any increase over and above the currently planned underground mining rates would only add GEOs over and above the anticipated 7,000 to 8,000 of annual gold equivalent ounces that we're already expecting from this asset in the latter few years of this decade. Certainly something to watch over the near future. On to slide 12, which touches on Dalgaranga, a high-grade underground gold asset on which Ore Royalties acquired a 1.8% gross revenue royalty towards the end of last year. On July 31st, Ramelius Resources closed its acquisition of Spartan Resources, meaning Dalgaranga represents a key piece of the former's proximate operations and infrastructure in the immediate region. Around the same time, in publicly available documents, Ramelius noted that an integrated feasibility study, likely along with a maiden mineral reserve for Dalgaranga, is being progressed and is set for release by the end of this calendar year. At Ore Royalties, we've been extremely encouraged by the fact that Ramelius's management team continues to point to the fact that underground development at Dalgaranga is already underway, and that the high-grade resource at the Never Never deposit could be processed through Ramelius's Checkers Mill prior to the end of 2025. For context, this is a full year ahead of what we originally anticipated. A further clue as to the potential timelines was uncovered last week when Ramelius provided us with an early buyback notice for 20% of the Dalgaranga gross revenue royalty, reducing the royalty rate on Dalgaranga from 1.8% to 1.44%, as well as reducing the royalty rate on Benz Mining's Glenbrook and Mount Egerton projects from 1.35% to 1.08%. For context, when we were initially moving forward with the deal, we were always expecting this buyback to take place shortly before first production. On slide 13, which provides a summary of the significant progress being made in some of our key optionality assets that are currently excluded from our five-year outlook. If you haven't had a chance to go through our June 2nd press release covering all these specific assets in more detail, I highly recommend taking a look, as what's in there might provide a good preview and how to think about what might be included in our 2030 five-year outlook when we release it mid-February of next year. By ways of examples, in terms of additional progress since that specific disclosure and subsequent to quarter end, on July 14th, the Bureau of Land Management provided a positive record of decision on Solidus Resources Spring Valley project in Nevada, meaning this large-scale gold heap leach project is effectively shovel-ready. And speaking of shovel-ready projects, July 21st, Osisko Development announced that it secured a $450 million project loan facility secured from a new strategic partner, Appian Capital Advisory, to fund development and construction of the Caribou Gold Project. This includes a $100 million initial draw that enables ODEV to accelerate the project pre-construction activities and materially de-risk the project. Further to this, announced just last week, the Cisco development raised an additional $195 million through concurrent bought deal and private placement equity financing, the latter with a strategic investor. Both the debt and equity combined, along with indications of interest from commodity traders seeking high-quality concentrate offtake and other potential financing arrangements that the Cisco development is actively negotiating, will provide the necessary funds to complete the construction of the mine. This is all extremely positive for ODEV and ourselves, given we have a 5% NSR at Cariboo. Finally, once the parallel equity offerings are closed as of mid-August, OR Royalties' equity position in the Cisco development will be reduced to approximately 14.3% on an undiluted basis versus our current 24.4% as of June 30th, 2025. Neither Spring Valley nor Cariboo, both of which would require approximately two-year construction periods, are included in our five-year outlook for 2029 and collectively represent approximately an additional 16,000 annual GEOs earned from Tier 1 mining jurisdictions when both projects are operating and the royalties are being paid. This provides a good segue to slide 14, where you can see all the projects listed, including Spring Valley and Cariboo in our optionality bar on the far right of this chart. Along the same lines as the projects listed as part of our current five-year outlook for 2029, all of the growth from the listed projects across the blue bars is already bought and paid for, with no contingent capital associated or required from OR Royalties. I wanted to also take some time to highlight the expansion asset that sits on the very top of the optionality bar, and that's the Odyssey second shaft at Canadian Malartic. Our partner Agnico Eagle continues to believe all the necessary disclosure on the concept to result in internal belief here at OR Royalties that we're now just talking about when and not an if. In fact, on Agnico's conference call held on Thursday last week, Agnico management made an explicit reference to a future throughput and gold production scenario with both shafts in operations, running at combined underground mining rates of 30,000 tons per day and 750 to 800,000 ounces of gold per annum from the single ore body. The sheer amount of gold discovered to date at Odyssey Underground, and more specifically East Gouldie, in which we have the 5% NSR royalty, and which continues to expand, is nothing short of staggering. And today, our partner Agnico still has 26 drills turning to add to this mineral resource and reserve ounce inventory and firm up the confidence of what has been previously defined. Based on our current understanding, Agnico is taking a well-warranted methodical approach to the potential of the second shaft. Consequently, it is unlikely that there will be any meaningful disclosure as it relates to the specific details of Agnico's findings until late 26, but most likely early 2027. As of today, it's our belief internally at OR that the value of the potential second shaft at Odyssey is not currently fully reflected in our share price, despite the fact that we truly believe that this no doubt will be happening and that the additional GEOs from a second shaft alone would be the single biggest individual asset growth driver for OR Royalties once it's all in production. And recall, the potential second shaft only serves as a component, albeit a key one, to Agnico's broader plans, which could see the entire Canadian Malartic complex produce 1 million ounces from the 2030s onwards, when factoring additional ore sources such as Marban and Wasamac. Switching gears, I also wanted to highlight an asset that has not been included in either of these slides, and that is of the Eagle Mine in the Yukon. At this stage, there isn't much detail to add here outside of what's already in the public domain. However, most recent updates include the early July release of the Independent Review Board report on their findings as to the cause of the heap leach failure back over a year ago in June 2024, along with the current conditions of the facilities on site. Eagle is now officially up for sale after an Ontario court approved the mine receiver's application to begin the sales process. The receiver, PricewaterhouseCoopers, has outlined a two-phase sale process in its submission to the Ontario Superior Court of Justice. The receiver will accept letters of intent very shortly, and then will choose qualified submissions to file an actual bid. Their timing is around October 15th. In his decision filed to the court, the presiding judge noted that all parties agreed that it was time to put the mine up for sale. The judge also said that while the First Nation of Natchunayak Dun did not oppose a sale, they were asking to be kept informed throughout the process. Or Royalties will continue to provide as much information as it can along the way. But needless to say, the next 6 to 8 months will be very telling as it relates to the potential future restart of Eagle. Quickly on slide 15, on top of everything else we've mentioned, here is an updated list of key catalysts on currently producing assets on the left and key near-term development projects that fall within our five-year outlook on the right. I'll single out just two for now. First, on May 27th, Mac Copper announced that it had entered into a binding scheme implementation deed with Harmony Gold to acquire 100% of the issued share capital in Mac Copper. Both of OR Royalty silver and copper streams at CSA remain unchanged in terms of future GEOs to OR Royalties from the asset. And as noted in last night's press release, we couldn't think of a better operator than Harmony, possessing the technical expertise to continue the path of the optimization and growth that already saw tremendous progress under Matt Copper's leadership. The transaction is expected to close in the second half of 2025. Looking to the right of the slide, and announced just last week, Gold Fields confirmed the continuation of the environmental assessment process for Windfall through the submission of the second series of responses to COMEX questions. Recall that the most recent fulsome update from Gold Fields provided the expectation that an updated feasibility study, along with final project permits, as well as final IBAs with the relevant First Nation groups, are all expected in the second half of this year, with a final investment decision and initial project construction expected in early 2026. Finally, we'll end the formal part of the presentation on slide 16, which outlines the current state of OR Royalties' balance sheet. At quarter end, we had a total debt of just under $36 million, and we're also in a net cash position of $14 million. This net cash number would grow to approximately $63 million if we were to include the $49 million value from our Mac Copper shares, which are listed on this slide as investments held for sale. Factoring this all in, with over $900 million in potential available liquidity at the end of the quarter, the balance sheet is looking incredibly strong and has gotten even stronger subsequent to quarter end, with OR Royalties having paid down an additional $21 million in debt. Our improved financial position is a key as OR Royalties' corporate development team continues to be stretched to capacity across multiple transaction opportunities. We're hoping to make some announcements on new meaningful transactions between now and the end of the year. At the same time, our robust organic growth profile and deep pipeline of palpable optionality affords OR Royalties the luxury to pick our spots and wait for the right deals, as we are not just willing to sacrifice investment returns or deal economics just for the sake of adding gold equivalent ounces. As such, we plan to adhere to our time-tested strategy of disciplined capital allocation in the pursuit of high-quality accretive streams and royalties that will bolster the company's current and near-term GEO deliveries, as well as cash flows for the benefit of our current and future shareholders. And with that, we will conclude the formal part of today's call, and we can move forward with the Q&A. Joelle?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Should you have a question, please press star followed by the one on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a prompt that your hand has been raised. Should you wish to decline from the polling process, please press star followed by the two. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing any keys. Your first question comes from Fahid Tariq with Jefferies. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Can you provide some more color on maybe the second half of this year and where the incremental geo sales are coming from? The way we're modeling it right now, it looks like it's going to maybe trend the lower end of the production guidance range, but just wondering what we're maybe missing. I think you mentioned Canadian Malartic and Namdini, but is there anything else we should be aware of? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Fahid. So to answer your question, we've been quite explicit about, again, 45% for H1 and 55% for the second half. Most of that pickup will come from a few things. Firstly, as you correctly pointed out and what I mentioned on the calls, we expect Canadian Malartic to continue to perform at our internal budget or better going forward, given, again, the tails deposition is certainly on track or ahead of schedule. The second thing, and probably the most notable thing, is we have an expectation at Mantos Blancos for the silver grade. The throughput is obviously quite steady right now at 20,000 tons per day, if you look at their disclosure. But what's been disappointing on our end is essentially the silver grade not meeting expectations. So we do expect that the silver grade at Mantos to be trending up over the second quarter. We also obviously have the continued ramp up at Tocantinzinho, and in the second half of this year, Namdini, who is essentially putting the mine through ramp up as well. That will be a contributing factor to the second half. Again, the 55-45% split.
Okay, great. And maybe just as switching gears to corporate development, you mentioned the team is stretched to capacity. Just at a high level, can you talk about if there's, it's philosophically a preference for producing versus development stage royalties, just given that, you know, compared to peers, OR has, I guess, a lower percentage of producing royalties? Thanks.
Yeah, that's a great question. So obviously our first preference would be to do accretive deals on producing assets. What we've obviously seen in the market, there's been some pretty significant transactions, and I'd encourage you to talk to those companies that have done those transactions. But those transactions, from our perspective, don't meet our economic hurdles for the most part. So we have been involved in the majority of, again, the transactions that you've seen printed. We have a number of filters, including, again, the geopolitical profile that I keep talking about. We have to make a decent hurdle for our shareholders. There are a lot of producing opportunities out there that our corporate development team is obviously involved in, but it's incredibly competitive. So we just have to be very disciplined with, again, what we're doing in terms of the economic returns for our portfolio and for our shareholders. With respect to development assets, yes, we are obviously involved in looking at a number of high-quality development assets. But what I would guide you to is our corporate development team is really focused only on development assets that will actually make a difference within our five-year outlook. In other words, producing GEOs within the next 5 years. So we're not looking at something that's very early stage that could take 15 years essentially to get through all the studies, the permitting, construction, and ramp up. So we really have focused our team on those type of high-quality assets in the jurisdictions that I mentioned earlier that we consider Tier 1.
That's very clear. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Cosmos 2 with CIBC. Your line is now open.
Thanks, Jason and team, for a very thorough presentation. Jason, as you talked about the five-year guidance, and as you talked about, there should be a new five-year guidance that should be presented to us early next year. So, you know, it's great you've talked about, you know, some of the assets that have not or are currently not included in your five-year guidance. I guess my question is, you know, as you look at your new five-year guidance, what criteria do you consider? Is it timing? Does it need to be fully financed? Does it need to be fully permitted? I'm just trying to get a gauge and, you know, to the extent that you can share with us, what could get included? For example, as you mentioned, Spring Valley is not included. And so number one, criteria, and number two, you know, specifically what could get included to the extent that you can share with us.
Yeah, thank you, Cosmos. Great question. So we are very vigilant when we're actually looking at our five-year guidance. And so the broad criteria, because as case by case by asset, is we have to have very good confidence and visibility that an asset will actually contribute GEOs over the next 5 years. Obviously, permits are a big factor to it. Having a company that's fully financed or visibility to a fully financed solution also would be incredibly important. As we all know, mining is a very, very tough business. So we look at other factors such as social license, such as the track record of, again, our partnering or our investee companies. Obviously, companies that have assets in production currently, and I just pick out, for example, Hermosa, which is in our guidance of this year, our five-year outlook. Again, that's a multi-asset, multi-billion dollar company with very good financial breadth and technical acumen. So those are the type of criteria that we look at when we will update the market in February as to, again, what will be included and what will not. I will tell you right now, more likely than not, given what Osisko Development has done around Cariboo, more likely than not, we're going to be including some contribution of Cariboo in our five-year outlook. And we'll have to see what happens with assets like Spring Valley and others, because obviously they've got the record of decision, which is a very positive de-risking component, but they're still looking to finalize, even though the U.S. Ex-Im Bank has provided term sheets for up to $835 million, they still yet to finalize a complete financing plan. So there's a lot of factors, but I say the two biggest ones are permitting, the acceptability and social license on site, as well as, again, having the financing in place for us to get complete confidence to include it in our five-year outlook.
Great. Switching gears a little bit and following up on Fahad's question there in terms of royalty acquisitions. As we've seen, as you mentioned as well, the activity has picked up and the size of these transactions have certainly picked up as well. We've seen a number of transactions hitting the $1 billion mark. How do you see OR or royalty positioned for some of these bigger deals? Is $1 billion deals? Would that still be within your snack bracket? And along the same topic, did that kind of factor into a decision to increase your line of credit from 550 Canadian to US $650 million?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So the way I'd answer that, Cosmos, is we certainly need to pick our spots. Again, given where the commodity complex has gone, and you've obviously seen a remark in some of the deals out there, we have to be true to the economic returns that we're providing to our shareholders. That doesn't mean we've got $900 million of available liquidity to act on accretive transactions for ourselves. Let's just say the billion-dollar type transaction in the right circumstance and the right return is not off the table for OR Royalties. We are working on a number of transactions that are significantly less than that. We also are in the flow with transactions that again, to meet the precedents that we've seen over the last couple quarters. It really just comes down to returns. It comes down to the security of the instrument and what we think is to essentially complement what we believe that we have the best portfolio, both growth and quality-wise, in the sector to complement that.
Great. And maybe one last question going to Osisko Development, and it's great to see that they've announced a financing package here. I guess there's two benefits. Number one, now it is quote-unquote fully financed. And number two, it helps in terms of diluting your ownership in the company, as you mentioned, Jason, to about 14.3%. I guess my question is, are you happy with that 14.3%, or would you want that to go even lower? And maybe if you can, kind of touch on the longer-term plans in terms of your holdings and the shares of ODEV.
Yeah, look, it's a great question, Cosmo. Firstly, we'd like to acknowledge and congratulate the Osisko development team because obviously they've de-risked the Cariboo project significantly over the course of the last year, getting their permits, having an optimized feasibility study, and finally getting the financing in place. I think we were very clear, especially when I came on, that we were no longer going to be funding the Osisko development Cariboo through equity placements or through any other type of financial arrangements, given at that time we owned close to 50% of the equity in the company. Through the course of a series of equity dilution or equity offerings, we are now down and will be now down when they close these financings to 14%. We are quite happy with our position at 14%. We are quite optimistic and, as I said, do believe that the Cariboo asset is a top quality Canadian producing development opportunity. And again, the big value for us, though, obviously comes from the big chunky 5% NSR we have. So to answer your question, we are currently very pleased with, you know, the 14.3% position that we'll have. We continue to have conversations with the Osisko development management team. And so we're a pleased shareholder. That's where I'd like to end that. So we're not looking in any fashion, so I'm very, very clear, we're not looking in any fashion to divest or sell that block in the near term.
Thanks, Jason, for some very thorough answers, and thanks for answering all my questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Cosmo.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, should you have a question, please press star 1. Your next question comes from Tanya Jakusconek with Scotiabank. Your line is now open.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Thank you for taking my two questions. The first one just follows up on the landscape for potential transactions. So if we eliminate the $1 billion range, what would you say most of your transaction range size-wise would be?
That's a great question, Tanya. Look, what I will tell you is it ranges anything from, again, somewhere around 35 million U.S. all the way up to, you know, close to the billion. Again, we're working on multiple transaction opportunities, and so can't give you any more specificity than that.
Okay. And would that also involve, Jason, the total size, including debt positions or equity positions included in these types of transactions, as well as just normal streams and other?
Yes, you can assume that, Tanya, that whatever we provide in terms of financial instruments, the targets are the transaction size, you can assume is all instruments, yes.
And could I also assume that that could include corporate transactions in that $1 billion range?
Well, again, the market's actually done a remarkable thing for all the royalty and streaming companies. We've all appreciated significantly. But I've always been very, very deliberate and open with yourself and others. Firstly, we're open for business. Secondly, there has been obviously an uptick, if you think of the Randgold Sandstorm transaction, on just the interest and let's say chatter out there in the marketplace around corporate transactions. We continue to look at opportunities both corporately and through royalty and streaming transactions that would be accretive to our shareholders. So to answer your question, yes, that would corporate transactions are included in, again, the range of dollars that we hope to deploy over the course of the next six to 12 months.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. And then my second question is I haven't seen any additional filings from Elliott. Have there been any update to what was then announced in April? I just haven't seen any further updates, and just wondering if you have as well.
It's a good question. So the last public disclosure that we see is Elliott owns 2.2 million or royalty shares. I don't think until they actually publish something further, it would not be appropriate for me to speculate beyond that.
No, I didn't want you to speculate. I just wanted to make sure that that's all that's out there. I haven't seen anything else that I've missed.
That's what we see as the last public disclosure, the 2.2 million shares.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you so much. Those are all my questions.
Thanks, Tanya.
There are no further questions at this time. I will now turn the call over to Jason for closing remarks.
Thank you, Joelle. As always, if anyone on the call or listening to the replay has any additional questions, insights, observations on our business and our business strategy, please do reach out to Grant, Heather, and myself, and we'd be more than pleased to provide more information about the bright future for our company and its shareholders. With that, we don't want to delay you any further, knowing that we are one of the last companies to report, and so you can enjoy the remainder of the summer. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes your conference call for today. We thank you for participating and ask that you please disconnect your lines.